Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them, and our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the Legislative Press Dungeon in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Glad to have you along as we review the week in North Carolina politics. Some ethical questions to weigh in on. Also, some new polling about what to do with the impeachment inquiry. Here for our discussion, as always, are Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
We begin with David Lewis, one of the most powerful lawmakers in the State House. He's a farmer. And last year, he borrowed $500,000 from a friend and political donor. That lender, John Gray, was later indicted as part of the federal bribery investigation into mega donor Greg Lindbergh. Representative Lewis says he had no idea of Gray's allegedly illegal dealings. A few points of context. The loan Lewis took out from Gray was 12% above market value. Hasn't been paid back yet. John Gray, no relation to you, Becky. This report came from Travis Fain of WRAL. Rob, this story, complicated and inevitably a gray area in our part-time legislature mm-hmm. where elected officials still have to make money unless they're independently wealthy.
Right.
Does it go beyond that? Is it something more?
Well, you know, we don't know whether there was any illegality involved here. It does sort of strain credulity. Lewis says he didn't know about some of the activities that global bankers that Gray and Lindbergh were involved with had been lobbying Republican lawmakers over. Whether it's illegal or not, though, it still stinks. It just sounds it is a bad look for Representative Lewis. It's a bad look for our government when a powerful political official – I mean, if he was just a run-of-the-mill farmer in Harnett County, he wouldn't be getting a $500,000 loan from a person who is a powerful influencer, who also, by the way, donated like $7,000 to his campaigns. It really smells bad. I think it speaks to this whole culture in Raleigh that has been here for too long amongst both Democrats and Republicans of lawmakers getting elected, coming to Raleigh, and then cashing in. They cash in on their connections. They get jobs. They become lobbyists. They make connections that allow them to get perks like this. And it's just – it's a bad look for the ethics of our state government, and I hope very much that it spurs on some additional reforms.
I think we need to be really careful when we start looking at these things. You know, there has been no allegation at all, as far as I've been able to ascertain, of any kind of illegal activity. This is simply a report on a personal contract loan that was taken out by a member of the General Assembly. You know, now, as Rob says, you know, he's a powerful political person. If he was a regular farmer, would this meet the you know, would this be on the front page? Would we be talking about this today? I think that's troublesome. There's really two things that come away from this report for me. One is a reminder of how difficult the life of a farmer is. And, of course, this goes back to, I think, the beginning of farming. You know, from the news reports, Representative Lewis looked for a loan because of a failing or a shortfall in the crops that he had, trying to make from one season to another, balance that thing. You know, we had devastating storms across eastern North Carolina. Representative Lewis's farm was only one of hundreds, if not thousands, of farms and farmlands that were affected by that. In the report, too, and we've learned this through this legislative session with some other issues, that it's difficult for farmers to get loans from banks. So where do you go? How do you do this? I mean, that's what, as I read that report, that was one thing that was a big takeaway to me was, wow, farming is really difficult to do. And in order to do this, you look for credit, you look for loans, you look for ways to get from one season to another. The other thing that really struck me, and again to this point that Rob made, you know, if this was a regular farmer, we wouldn't be looking at it. However, it is a very powerful political person. Well, as we're getting ready to go into the 2020 election cycle, as people people are going to be making decisions as to whether or not they want to step up and run for public office. This is the kind of thing that I think is a tremendous deterrent to people to do that. If you think about if you're considering putting yourself and your family in the public light, this is the kind of thing that you could very well be subjected to, having done nothing illegal, have done nothing wrong, just trying to get by to do whatever your business is, whether it's farming, whether it's being a lawyer, whether it's being a business person. I think that's troublesome.
The issue is not whether we'd be talking about it if they were a run-of-the-mill farmer. The reason that we wouldn't be is because it wouldn't have happened. He couldn't have gotten this loan if he wasn't a powerful politician. There's no chance, Becky. Come on.
Anybody in the farming community. They get loans from relatives. They get loans from family members.
$500,000
from someone who was a political contributor, who is a very well-connected political contributor. And here's the other issue. I haven't said it's illegal. I don't know that it is. The question, though, is that politicians and our elected officials must go the extra mile to have no appearance of impropriety. And you know, this just doesn't even pass the cab driver test. You know, if you explain this to just an average person on the street and said, what do you think?
Well, it depends on the way you frame it. If you say, you know, it is difficult for people to serve in the General Assembly because they are prohibited basically by public condemnation from conducting their business. I mean, it depends. It's like anything else. It depends on the way that you frame it. To me, those are the two takeaways that I have, is a reminder of how tough it is to be a farmer in North Carolina, and also how this kind of spin on things is really has a chilling effect on people wanting to enter public service.
I hope it has a chilling effect on people who want to enter public service looking to make it rich. People, I mean, we see this phenomenon constantly for years of people coming to Raleigh and cashing in and taking advantage of their high position. I think we're going to probably talk about the Speaker of the House doing similar things. And that's just reflects very poorly on our government. And, you know, if it dissuades some people who were looking to come to Raleigh to cash in from running, then good.
Well, there's a difference between cashing in and using your expertise and your experience to make a living. And I think there's a very thin line there. We have to be really careful.
But we should err on the side of not crossing that line.
So a couple of follow-ups, I guess, to tick through shortly. But one for you, Rob, is there's nothing to indicate to me that this is any kind of sweetheart deal. There's no evidence of that. It's not as though Lewis was elected or Lewis, you know, got a $500,000 loan just because, or bought a plot of land on the beach and wanted to build a beautiful 9-bedroom beach house. I mean, this was a farmer who couldn't get a loan from another avenue. That's what he says. So we'll take him at his word for this conversation. Couldn't get a loan elsewhere. And he did turn to this donor, the guy who's connected to Lindbergh, and got this very large loan. I mean, I think we can all agree $500,000 is a very large loan. 12% loan.
Mm-hmm, which is not paid back.
Is not paid back yet.
I mean, it's an appearance of impropriety. It raises real red flags. I agree. It's tough to be a farmer. That's the arrangement Representative Lewis made when he got into that business and when he came to Raleigh and, I don't know, spent a lot of time away from his farm serving in the General Assembly. These are decisions that people make as adults and as professionals, and he's got to live with the consequences. Again, a politician needs to be above any implication of impropriety. And I think in this case, it's clear that it smells very bad.
Who's setting that threshold? Who's setting that impropriety? And I think we just need to be very, very careful of that we don't set that threshold in such a way that no one can make a living, no one can serve. I think that it's a thin line, and I think we need to be very, very careful of where we come down on that.
One more follow-up for each of you before we move on. Wednesday when this news broke, it was the 142nd legislative day. I might be swapping the chambers here, but I believe it was the 142nd legislative day in the House, the 139th legislative day in the Senate. Generally speaking, the average work year is 240 days. We have a part-time legislature. And I'm wondering if this story moved either of you to reconsider or again wonder about, do we need a full-time legislature? Ought we move the 170 lawmakers to a salary or have some sort of limitation or understanding or more realistic calendar of, like Congress, you're in for these 3 months, you're out for those 2 weeks, something so that perhaps the balance between legislative life and work life is a little more reasonable?
We have a full-time legislature right now. We just don't call it that.
Well, they don't get paid
And they don't get paid. I agree. I think that we should pay our lawmakers a decent salary, and so they're not forced to do things like this, not be looking to make bucks on the side every time they can. We see this with law practices. We've seen this with the Speaker of the House, again, where he's having to take some sort of questionable clients at times, you know, I guess to make a living, although as a speaker, he gets paid a lot more. Yeah, I definitely agree that this session has shown that we have a full-time legislature and we ought to just act like we do.
Well, and some people would say making bucks on the side is having a job and making a living so that you can support your family. You know, lawmakers make, in our part-time legislature, they rank-and-file legislators make $13,000 a year, and even leadership doesn't make a lot more than that. So, Jeff, yeah, I think we really do need to look at how we structure this, how we structure the calendar, how we structure the responsibilities, and the pay associated with that. Because at the end of the day, I think the losers in this are the people of North Carolina when good people, qualified people, people with a heart for public service are discouraged from doing so for fear of being on the front page of the newspaper because they had a private contract to for their business. And I think, you know, yes, we need to rethink this.
This is certainly something that generated a lot of conversation here within the halls of the legislature this week. A couple more topics to get to that are unrelated to this, but in some ways a topic that is loosely related to this. I want to ask you about a lawsuit. We also learned this week, another report from Travis Fain of WRAL, that House Speaker Tim Moore, who in his private life is an attorney and he is representing a client in a wrongful death case out of Cleveland County, where Moore was from, and he is suing Duke Energy. He is suing Duke Energy. At the same time, and our listeners will remember, we had a pretty long conversation last week about this contentious and controversial Duke Energy bill that has been moving, has not completed its path through the State House, but may soon do that in the weeks to come. Moore, on one hand, is suing Duke Energy, and it's part of this wrongful death suit. On the other hand, is overseeing the House, and there is this piece of notable legislation that has been moving through. And just because there's always, you know, layers and interesting nuggets with all this, one of the expert witnesses in this wrongful death case is David Lewis, who we've just been talking about. And the reason, as I understand it from reading the report, is he's an expert witness because he knows a lot about tractors because he was a tractor salesman and somebody was on a tractor and was sadly, unfortunately, electrocuted because there was a line, whether it was too low or not, is something for the court to handle. That's a whole lot of context. Let's move to this situation with Moore and Lewis. Does this present to you more of a conflict of interest? This situation with Moore, let me ask the question this way. Seeing that Moore is involved in this wrongful death suit, should he recuse himself from any open legislative dealings with this bill, so long as he's also an attorney on that separate case?
Okay, that's a good question. It's a legitimate question. I don't think that's a question that I can or should answer. There are processes put in place within the General Assembly that deal with conflict of interest. We have a whole ethics board. We have a legislative ethics commission that looks at these things and advises legislators on when they can and when they can't and those kind of things. From the reports that I've read, this was put before those, and the advice that was given to Speaker Moore was that it was okay for him to proceed with this. That's all I have to go on. I mean, I don't feel like I'm in a position to make that judgment.
Right.
Those processes are in place, but I think
they're,
you know, but I think to your point of conflicts of interest with legislators is something that should always be at the forefront, and they should always be asking those questions of, you know, is there a conflict of interest in a vote that you're taking, in a position that you're testifying in committee, or between your personal life, your work life, and your legislative life?
If you were Tim Moore, would you recuse yourself from legislative dealings with the Duke Energy bill?
From what I know about it, and again, I mean, I'm like a regular person sitting here. You know, I have no inside knowledge, and I'm not a lawyer. I have no expertise in conflict of interest. I probably would, but again, you know, there are processes and there are rules and there are regulations and there are guardrails in place that are there. If we need to look at that in light of some of these cases, but I think that's what the Legislative Ethics Commission does, is they look at those specific examples when legislators bring those to them and make a determination on that.
I agree. I think he probably should recuse himself, although I think it would have been better if he had just not taken the case. The fact that he has employed Representative Lewis as an expert witness in the case just, once again, reinforces the point that we have these connections that people make by getting elected that they then turn into financial personal advantage for themselves, that it just is not the way we should be operating our government. There have been multiple instances down through the years in which there have been questions raised about Speaker Moore's business dealings. He is clearly, in addition to being a private attorney, sort of an entrepreneur. You know, he's been involved in real estate and pharmaceutical deals, and there have been questions about him being the Cleveland County attorney, while at the same time he's presiding over a budget that could impact the budget of that county. I think when you get to be in a high office like Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, or in a real leadership position, the opportunities for conflict get a lot more frequent, and it's different from just a run-of-the-mill lawmaker who could take themselves out of a bill. It's almost impossible for the Speaker to recuse themselves, really, as a practical matter, from consideration of legislation, because they set the calendar.
Sure.
They decide, you know, really whether bills are going to be heard or not. And so I think that he should be much more careful in erring on the side of avoiding even the appearance of conflict in this matter and lots of other matters. And I think it's unfortunate. And we should also point out again that the Speaker gets a pretty good supplement. It makes a lot more money than the average rank and file member in terms of their supplements and per diems and all that kind of stuff.
On Wednesday, we got unsettling water quality and environmental news regarding the level of toxic chemicals in the Cape Fear River near Wilmington's drinking water intake. This stems from an NC State report based on water samples from 2015. The results show concentrations of PFAS at more than 900 times the level state scientists have set as a health goal. All kinds of considerations here: drinking water, possible soil contamination, even harm to the air. Outside of Fayetteville, the Chemours site, that's company, the factory that is believed to be the source of this contamination, is no longer discharging water. And that company has agreed to eliminate 99.99% of Gen X and PFAS air emissions by the end of the year. But I'm wondering, is that enough? And if not, what else needs to happen?
Well, this water sample was taken from 2015. These cleanup efforts began in 2017. So I guess the answer to that is, has there been additional testing done now that we're 2019 into this and these measures have been taken place? Hopefully they have, to clean this up.
Yeah, we know that for decades, this has been going into this sample was taken right near the city of Wilmington's water intake for its municipal water system. So it appears that for decades, these really troublingly high levels of this toxic chemical have been going into people's water supply. It's not something you can filter out. Certainly wasn't something that the city of Wilmington was prepared for or was dealing with. These PFAS are a big problem all over, not just in that area, but in other parts of the state. They have affected firefighters because it's in firefighter foam. It's run into water supplies in lots of other parts of the state. It's known as a forever chemical because it doesn't really break down once it gets in your body. It's something we need to be deeply, deeply concerned about, and it's something that calls for urgent federal and state regulatory activity to see what we can do to keep it out of our water and air.
Yes or no, next time you go to Wilmington, will you drink the tap water?
Yes. And I think we've come a long way this is exactly the kind of reports that we want to see. Is there was a problem, it was identified, they're taking steps to fix it. And as far as I know, the testing and the other things have been successful with this.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that one. I'd have to maybe do a little more reading before I went there.
Finally, Trump and impeachment, and Republican U.S. Senator Tom Tillis. Reminder, Tillis is up for re-election next year. On Trump's decision to remove U.S. troops from northern Syria, Tillis is giving the president the benefit of the doubt. On impeachment, Tillis is not backing it, at least not at this point. According to a new survey from left-leaning public policy polling, 48% of North Carolina voters support impeaching our 45th president, and 48% do not. In North Carolina, there is perhaps no more notable opinion than Tillis's on how to handle these impeachment matters. This data strikes me as incomplete, if not preliminary. Two-part question. Do you support the impeachment inquiry, and should Senator Tillis?
Of course. Yes, it's absolutely essential that we take this course. At a minimum, one would have hoped that Senator Tillis might have followed the lead of the senior senator, Senator Burr, who's at least had the good judgment to pretty much stay quiet on this issue. He and Senator Warner, the Democratic senator from Virginia, and the Senate Intelligence Committee just this week released a joint report which documented the Russian meddling in the 2016 election, called for additional safeguards to prevent it, basically refuting the claims of the Trump administration. I think that the people who are honest with themselves, who have a measure of self-respect, like Senator Mitt Romney, who've had the guts to come out and say that the president's behavior is appalling, clearly violates several longstanding federal laws. I'm not surprised, I guess, that Tillis has attached himself at the hip with Trump. He tried once before to stand up to Trump, and he got slapped down by the far right of his party. But it's a pretty embarrassing, craven behavior on the senator's part.
Well, I think now that we started to go down this impeachment road, I think that we need to finish it. We need to go ahead and put it to rest, move on. Let's get back to the business of the country.
So you support it. Should Senator Tillis support it?
I don't speak for Senator Tillis. He has said that the inquiry is a waste of resources, and I think the longer that this goes on, the more waste it is of money, energy, attention of leadership throughout the federal government.
I mean, what could be wasteful about preserving our form of government and assuring that we don't have a criminal at the head of it? I mean, I can't think of
there's
a more
an election
useful.
In yeah, there's an election well, coming up. We'll deal with it then.
If the president is shown to have engaged in criminal activity, then he needs to be removed now. We don't need to wait another 16 months or whatever until inauguration in 2021. If he is doing the things that appears he's doing, then he should have been out of there a long time
ago.
Then
do the investigation, get it over with, and let's move on.
I think they're trying.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekends.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for tuning in. As a reminder, you can download the program, subscribe as well to the WNC Politics podcast feed, iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Stay up to date with what I'm working on, also some of my colleagues at our website, WNC.org. For Rob and Becky, I'm Jeff. We'll talk to you again next week. Speaking to you, and the message is clear. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself.